Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. February 4th, 2019, in Vrindavan, India. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Mohini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva, Text 35. Skaneretasi sopasyad Atmanam Deva Maya Jari Kritam Nirpashesta Sanyavarta Kashmalat Vartata Kashmalat. Skane, when fully discharged, Retasi, the semen, Saha, Lord Shiva, Apasyat, saw Atmanam, his own self, Deva Mayaya, by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jarikritam, had become victimized as a fool. Nripashrestha, O best of kings, Maharaj Parikit. Sanyavartata, restrained himself further. Kasmalat, from illusion. Srila Prabhupada's translation. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of kings, when Lord Shiva had fully discharged semen, he could see how he himself had become victimized by the illusion created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he restrained himself from any further maya. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Once one is agitated by lusty desires upon seeing a woman, those desires increase more and more. But when semen is discharged in the act of sex, the lusty desires diminish. The same principle acted upon Lord Shiva. He was allured by the beautiful woman. Which beautiful woman? Mohini Murti. Is that an ordinary woman? No. Who is that? It's Krishna himself, it's Lord Vishnu. But when his semen had been fully discharged, he came to his senses and realized how he had been victimized as soon as he saw the woman in the forest. If one is trained to protect his semen by observing celibacy, naturally he's not attracted by the beauty of a woman. If one can remain a brahmachari, he saves himself so much trouble in material existence. Material existence means enjoying the pleasure of sexual intercourse. If one is educated about sex life and trained to protect his semen, he is saved from the danger of material existence. Skane reta siyo pasyad atmanam deva mayaya jagi kritam nirpa shresta sanyavartat kashmalat. O Maharaj Parikit, best of kings, when Lord Shiva had fully discharged semen, he could see how he himself had been victimized by the illusion created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he restrained himself from any further maya. So this is the key is given here, how to avoid material entanglement in the first place. Right? Lord Shiva became bewildered. Obviously, this is Leela. He's becoming bewildered by Krishna himself. So this is not some ordinary thing. But this particular Leela is here for, among other reasons, to give us some template for how to avoid being victimized. Yes? That's why Mohini took Lord Shiva through all the hermitages of the sages so they could become humble. They could see even Lord Shiva's having a problem with this. So why do we want to avoid becoming entangled in this world? And how do we do that? Most materialistic people want to become entangled in this world. That's their goal. That's their purpose. If you go to most schools, not this school, but most schools, I hope not this school, but in most schools, what do they tell you? If you want to be happy, what should you do? Huh? Go to? Go to multinational companies, yes. Get a high status job. Make a lot of money. Find a beautiful romantic partner, husband, wife. Have a big house. Have intelligent children that also get high status jobs. Isn't it? Have a flat screen TV in every room. And nowadays you also have to get a dog. It's coming to India now also. I even see it sometimes here in Vrindavan. They have some pet dog. And then you'll be happy. You know, get really entangled in this world if you want to be happy. Isn't that the propaganda? Yes? Those of us who join the Hare Krishna movement, coming from a materialistic background, I remember my mother saying to me, "You're too young to be so disillusioned." Yeah? That we are saying you should not be attached to sexual intercourse is just revolutionary. This is the whole basis of the world, isn't it? It's how they advertise everything, even laundry detergent. Yeah. Everything. Toothpaste, laundry detergent, cars, socks. Some, you know, some beautiful woman by the car, some man and woman with the laundry detergent. Oh, I love you, laundry detergent. You know, this is the whole basis of the whole thing, is to try to imitate Krishna, to try to imitate Krishna's adi-ras, to try to become the enjoyer in this world, especially sex, money, prestige, and so forth. And somebody who's not interested in these things, they think, well, they're just a complete fool. Isn't that a fact? Yes? We tell people about our four regulative principles, and they're like, how do you live? What kind of happiness do you have in life? You must be brainwashed. It must be some kind of a cult. They're just trying to control you. But here Lord Shiva is seeing that his attachment to a woman made him a fool. And this theme is repeated over and over and over again in the Bhagavatam, generally in terms of men's attachment to women, but sometimes in terms of women's attachment to men also. So why does material attachment make us fools? Why do we want to get free of it? Well, let's look at the nature of illusion, which is very nicely described here in this verse and purport. And then we're going to compare that to the nature of actual spiritual happiness. And then we're going to try to look at, well, how do I get from illusion to reality? So the nature of illusion is very nicely described in the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. Do any of you boys know the two verses of how we get into illusion? Any of you know? Any of the boys here? You know the second verse? Okay, but it's 62 and 63 of the second chapter. And what does illusion start with? It starts with contemplating, thinking about. Oh, that would be nice. I would like that. If I had that, I'd be happy. Or sometimes, oh, if I have to get away from that. I have to get rid of that. Contemplation can be in terms of what you want or what you don't want. So here the contemplation started when Lord Shiva saw Mohini Murti in the forest playing with a ball and looking at him. And he started, oh, I want to enjoy her. Huh? Just like every day walking, we see so many men, so many women, so many things. But the problem becomes when you contemplate, isn't it? Right? If you're just walking down the street, but if you see something and you go, oh. Like the shops, they put their things out in the front, so you'll look at them, isn't it? And at least in the West, they have a shop window where they put things that they think you're going to want to buy. And if you stop and you look, oh, look at that phone. Look at those shoes. I want that. It will make me happy. Or sometimes, again, it's what we don't want. Well, this will help me get free of disease, or this will help me get free of poverty, or this will help me get free of people I don't like. And we start thinking about it. Yes, I want this. And then the desires get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger until it becomes practically not just mental but physical. Right? There starts to be chemicals in the body. I want that. I have to have it. And we become a little crazy. We actually lose our good sense. Once we decide that there's a direct link between having something in the world and our happiness, or not having something in the world and our happiness, then we get this attachment. And in that attachment, we get lust. So what is lust? I mean, here particularly this is about sexual lust. But lust in general means that I lose sight of the consequences. I have to have this thing or not have this thing, regardless of the consequences, somehow or other. We don't think about anything other than our immediate satisfaction. I mean, even people, you know, getting credit card debt to buy something, it's like this. I must have it, and I must have it now, and, well, I'll pay for it later. I mean, just think of what happened to Lord Shiva, you know. He's chasing this naked woman through the ashrams of the sages. How embarrassing. And now he's feeling embarrassed. Again, this is Leela, and he's happy that his master was able to embarrass him. You can make some room for these young boys so they don't have to sit on the cold floor. Come in, come in. Don't sit on the cold floor. Then the problem is, after we get what we wanted, Krishna says we become angry. We become disappointed. We feel like a fool. So why is it we feel like a fool? So I heard this from Tamal Krishnamurti many years ago, and I've played this game all over the world. I don't know if I have time to play the whole game here. But at least if you can think about anything you've wanted in this world, all the things, all the material desires you've had, mine could fill the whole courtyard. And then think of what percentage of those you didn't get at all, that you just didn't get them. So what percentage did you not get? Was it 20%, 50, 90? Then we have the material desires we wanted, and we got them. And then we didn't like them. You buy that new pair of shoes, and then it hurts your feet. Right? I was with some devotees a few months ago, and one of them, oh, I really like that pair of shoes. You know, so she bought the shoes, and they're hurting my feet. You marry someone, and then you decide you actually don't like them very much. Happens, you know. You work hard for a job, then you don't like the job. And one devotee friend, she became a lawyer, so many years of school, and then she discovered she didn't like being a lawyer. So think of all the material desires we've had. And we got them, and then we were disappointed. So what percentage were disappointing? 30%, 60%? Then there's the material desires we get, and they're perfect. We love them. I had a car like that. I really liked that car. Really liked it. Got good gas mileage. It had screens in the windows so you could sleep in it and the mosquitoes wouldn't bite you. The seats went down flat. And then one day somebody smashed into it. So if we think about all the material desires we have and we get them and they're perfect, What percentage of them are permanent? Zero, isn't it? In fact, the material desires you get in there perfect are the most painful because you lose something you really liked. So this is the problem with material illusion. Everything we want in this world, either we don't get it at all, or we get it and we're disappointed, or we get it and we love it, and it's temporary. Dukalayama Shashvatam, it's miserable, and even when it's not miserable, it's temporary. So it's always miserable. We're always left with what? How many material things do we get and they're perfect and we get to keep, everybody? Everybody. How many? Come on. How many material things do we get them and they're perfect and we get to keep them? What's the percentage?
Zero.
And then even while you have them, even if they're perfect, do you think that car made me totally in ecstasy? No, of course not. It was just useful. Even if you get something that's perfect, it's not fully satisfying. How can it be? First of all, it doesn't touch the soul. It just has to do with the body, and I'm not this body. It's like watching a movie where the hero gets happy. You're just watching it. You're not happy. You might feel when you're watching the movie, oh, I'm happy. You know, the hero gets a lot of money, but your bank account is the same, you know. The hero gets the beautiful girl, but there's no beautiful girl sitting next to you. And it's like that. All of our material happiness is just happening to the body and mind. And Krishna says, 5th chapter, 13th chapter, we're just the observer. We're not even doing anything. It's like a movie we're watching or a computer game we're playing. So even during the time you have those perfect material things, it's all superficial. So our problem is that we get attached and we think these material things will satisfy us. That's the problem. And that's why we want to give them up. That's why we want to give up this contemplation and attachment, because it just brings us to things that ultimately make us unhappy and immediately don't even satisfy us. What is it we really want? What is it everybody really wants? You know, here we see Lord Shiva. He's wanting her more and more and more and more and more, and then it's like, oh, that was stupid. What we really want is something that keeps getting better and 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 never becomes, oh, that was stupid. That never becomes boring. That never becomes disgusting. That if you really like pizza, but you have it for breakfast, and you have pizza for lunch, and you have pizza for dinner, and you have pizza for breakfast, and you have pizza for lunch, and you have pizza for dinner, and you have pizza for breakfast, and pizza for lunch. After a while, you're like, no more pizza. But that's not what we want. We want a happiness that's fresh and new. That's always there. Ajam Purana Purusham Nava Yovanam Cha. That's Krishna. He's eternal but always fresh, always new. That's the happiness we're looking for. And we're looking for an authentic happiness that touches the soul, that's not just hearing, seeing, tasting, touching with the senses of this body while we watch as the soul. We're looking for something that touches us in a deep, satisfying way that keeps getting better and better. And we're looking for some kind of happiness that's based on knowledge and authenticity, not ignorance. That's what we want. But we can't go for that as long as we're holding on to the false thing. Right? If our hands are full of the false thing, I can't receive the actual thing. Does this make sense to everybody? Right? I'm blocking it. Actually, I already have the real thing. It already exists. But I'm blocking it by my attachment to the false thing. It's something like if you already had a wonderful feast of tasty, healthy food, but instead you're filling your stomach with, you know, soda or something like that. And that you can't get the real thing. You can't get the actual food. So what is our solution? We're very fortunate as bhakti yogis what our solution is. We can go immediately to the real thing. The jnana yogis, karma yogis, asanga yogis, they're just working on detachment, 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 detachment. And when they become detached enough, the real thing starts to manifest. Like if you scrub a dirty pot long enough, you start seeing the silver of the pot. But we're working on immediate attachment. Even at the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, we're working at immediate attachment to beautiful Gaur Nitya and Krishna Balaram and Radhasham. Param Drisva Nivartite. We're trying to get a higher taste immediately. That through chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, taking prasadam, studying the books, doing service, even in the beginning, Kevala Nandakanda, we start to experience something that's authentic. I remember when I was, the first time I had a sandesh offered to Krishna, and I ate it and I thought, what is this? And all day I was thinking about it when I came back to the temple in the evening. I said, what was that? They said, oh, milk and sugar. I'm like, no. It's not possible. And I had been a chef in a hotel previously, and I was like, there's no way. And they said, well, some lemon juice. I said, maybe that's it, but I don't think so. Like Mahaprabhu said, what is this taste in the prasadam? It's all ordinary ingredients, but there's another taste because Krishna's eaten it. And maybe for us who are so covered with the modes, we don't experience it all the time, but at least sometimes we taste prasadam and we're like, what is this? It's not something of this world. It's not something you can describe just with flour and sugar and butter. And sometimes we're in a kirtan. And maybe even the singer's not so expert, the musicians aren't so expert, but there's this happiness that can't be described materially. That's authentic. And we're reading the books and we're just filled with this understanding and this joy that's beyond some intellectual stimulation of some discussion of ordinary philosophy and stories. And we experience this authentic happiness and we go, wow, what was that? That was different. It was different than all the happiness of this world. It has a different quality to it. And we find as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we should start experiencing that happiness more and more often, more and more deeply. Right? Brahmabhuta prasanatma. We should become expansively joyful. Then simultaneously, Prabhupada says, we see the real form of maya. Prabhupada said it, we see the naked form of material desires. We see the illusion is removed and we see the illusion as an illusion. It's like when I was 10 years old and I went to Hollywood and I visited the set of a TV show that I had liked to watch. But when I was watching them filming, all the illusion is gone. You know? And the TV show, the people would do magic, but when you were actually there, you could see there was no magic. They go, magic, magic. And in the TV show, some dog would appear. But actually, when they were filming it, they bring a dog onto the stage. You know? And in the set, I could see that when they walked upstairs to the other room, actually, there was nothing upstairs. They were just walking into the air. And I could never really enjoy the show again. You understand? I'm looking at the show. Oh, that's fake. Oh, that's fake. No. There's a very famous story from the Odyssey, the Greek Odyssey. Well, Ulysses is taking his men back from the Trojan War, and he's warned, be very careful of this island of the witches. Anybody know the name of the witches? Does anyone study these sort of classics anymore? Prabhupada used to talk about the Odyssey. No, you don't study, you should study. Prabhupada said our children in school, they should study the classics. Anyway, so they're going past this island, and the witches are called the sirens. That's where we get the English word sirens from. They're called the sirens. And they would sing. And when they would sing, their singing was a magic spell. And anyone who heard their singing, instead of seeing witches on a desert island covered with human bones, they would see beautiful young women on a tropical island. And they would go there, and the witches would eat them. Uh-huh. So Ulysses was warned about this, so he had all of his men plug their ears with wax so they couldn't hear the voices of the sirens. But he wanted to see, right? Like we read about Markandeya, he said, I want to see Maya. Or here, Lord Shiva, I'd like to see Mohini Murti. Be careful what you ask for. So Ulysses said, I want to hear the siren song. But he said, tie me to the mast of the ship, and while we are going past this island, ignore my commands. So he was hearing the song, and he was seeing this illusion, and he's straining at the ropes. But the men who couldn't hear the song, they saw the witches and the bones in the desert, and they're rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing. So when we become attached to Krishna, Krishna's like the sun. He lights everything up, and we see Maya for what it is. We don't see the illusion. We see the reality. And we say, oh, a bunch of witches on a desert island with some bones. No, thank you. And it's not that we hate Maya. Maya is Krishna's energy. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Maya is Krishna's energy. We don't hate it. But nor are we going to be attracted by it to want to enjoy it separately from Krishna. We see it for what it is. Now, what is it we see for what it is? This is such a wonderful, amazing, incredible thing that distinguishes us from the impersonalists. What is Maya? What is Maya? Nicely explained, Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 9. Whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Maya is the mental state of seeing things unrelated to Krishna. As Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, Chapter 14, Maya exists only within the mind. The witches on the desert island with the bones is not the car or even the house or even the wife or the husband or the money. Maya is thinking, Ishwaraham maham bhogi siddham. I am the enjoyer. I am the Purusha. This world is for me to enjoy. That's the witches. That's the desert. That's the bones. That's the disappointment. That's the thinking, oh, what a fool I am. Why did I do this? It's not the things. It's not even the activities. It's the mood that I am the center. I am God. I am the enjoyer. Everything is here for my pleasure. We are not world negating. Nor are we world enjoying. We see the world as what? Krishna's what? Energy. Like Srila Prabhupada one time said, when you see a beautiful woman, you think, oh, all these beautiful women there for Krishna to enjoy. They're all Krishna's gopis. We see this world as for Krishna's pleasure. Then there's no Maya. Then there's no suffering. And in fact, the things in the world can be an udipan, an impetus for genuine transcendental happiness. Imagine that. Like this beautiful temple. It's just concrete and bricks and stone. But you see this temple and you can fall in love with Krishna. Isn't that a fact? Why? Because here we understand it's Krishna's. It's such a wonderful cure for Maya. Just change how you see it. And this all is about beautiful women. Prabhupada was meeting with some non-devotees, and one of them was a very young, beautiful woman, and he said, "You are very beautiful." It's not that Prabhupada didn't know she was beautiful. He said, "Use your beauty in Krishna's service. Your beauty belongs to Krishna." That's how Prabhupada saw it. Like we had one of my god sisters who was a fashion model, actually several, and she used her fame as a fashion model to preach Krishna consciousness. So when we see like that, then we don't contemplate for our own enjoyment and we never become foolish. That is the real way. Here we're specifically talking about sexual desire. That's the real way to conquer sexual desire. Not that we're Astanga yogis just trying to raise the reproductive fluid to the brain in some mechanical way, or just looking at the world and going, it's all bones and blood and flesh and disgusting things anyway. That's a jnani or an Astanga yogi. Good luck with that in Kali Yuga. And even the great Astanga yogis like Vishramrita, who was successful in doing this, wasn't so successful in doing this. Right? He was good at all the mechanics, and he just heard some jewelry, you know. Oh, it must be a woman's jewelry. Imagine that. So shouldn't try to become detached like that, just through philosophical conviction. Klesho dika tarashtesham. It's dangerous, difficult, or just through something mechanical. But through seeing, it's Krishna. Krishna is the light. Krishna is the air. Krishna is the warmth. Krishna is the beauty. The beauty of the birds is his artistic sense. The trees are his hairs. Everything is his. In that way, we give up our long-cherished desire to be the lords of this world. And then what happens is we just don't contemplate things as sense objects at all. It's not that we contemplate them and then we have to control them. Good luck with that. It doesn't work. And then we become free of attachment and aversion. This is very important. And you young boys, if you can get this now, oh my goodness, will you be happy. Don't wait until you're like 70. Right after Krishna gives the sequence of attachment in Gita 2:62 and 63, he says something very interesting in 2:64. He says, give up attachment and aversion. Regulate your senses and you'll get prasadam. He didn't mean burfi. He meant you'll get grace. When we see Krishna in everything and we see how everything's in Krishna and everything's related to Krishna, then we become free from attachment and aversion. Attachment is when you're thinking, this thing will make me happy. And aversion is when you're thinking, oh, this thing won't make me happy. One becomes instead neutral. Oh, it's Krishna's energy. Can I use it in Krishna's service? If yes, all right. If I can't, oh, then it's not mine to use in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Yes? You see some beautiful woman. Can I engage this woman in Krishna's service? Yes? Okay. If the answer is no, then the answer is no. And there's no attachment and there's no aversion. Then there's no contemplation. then there's no connection of this is a sense object for me. This is a means for my happiness. It's neutral. Everything becomes just neutral. And to regulate our senses, to lead a regulated life, a proper, pious life, we have our no eating meat, fish, and eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. And if we do these two things, this mental and physical culture, Krishna gives us grace. Because ultimately, we only become free from illusion and attached to Krishna by Krishna's grace. Not by our own effort alone. There's a secret devotee who's a very famous preacher in the Catholic world. He's a Catholic monk, and he's very secretly taken up Krishna consciousness, chanting 16 rounds and so forth. And he's kept it secret so he can keep his position as a Catholic preacher. And when I first met him, and I said, oh, so you're a monk? He said, yes. He said, but for me, celibacy is not a discipline. It's a charism. So I wasn't so familiar with how that word is used in the Catholic tradition, not having been raised Catholic. So I looked it up, and a charism means a gift. And I thought, those who take up celibacy as a discipline are always in danger, isn't it? But those who have celibacy as a charism are safe. Not that you can't misuse your gift, that's something else. But we should be wanting the Lord to give us mercy. And we get that mercy by having both the mental and the physical culture of Krishna consciousness. That indicates to the Lord that we want his mercy, that we'll use his mercy nicely, that we'll appreciate his mercy, that we genuinely want to love him. And then he says, okay, I will help you. And he removes the curtain and says, here is the nature of selfish enjoyment, and here is the nature of love and service. And after Krishna shows us both, what does he say? What does he say to Arjuna? Now I have shown you everything, now you. Now you do what? Now you, hey. What do you do after you see the real nature of Maya and Krishna? What do you have to do? You have to? Come on, end of Bhagavad Gita. You have to choose. Yes? Everyone's too cold to think. It's cold. I can't think. You have to choose. So by Krishna's grace, we can see the real nature of Maya. We can see the real nature of Krishna. We choose, and then Krishna gives us his grace. And then there's no allurement from Maya. None. It's not even a temptation. It's not even an allurement. It's just not there. One knows it's there, but it's like, why would I want to go on a desert island full of witches with bones? It's not of any interest. So we're very fortunate that we know that we should be giving up material attachment. Most people in the world are trying to increase their material attachment. And we're also very fortunate that we have this process of bhakti that encompasses a holistic system for both attachment to Krishna and detachment from Maya. And as Prabhupada writes in the first canto, the real need of the soul is to have freedom. And this is the freedom we need, not political freedom, not freedom to fly to other planets, but freedom from being controlled by an illusion, freedom from being controlled by something that makes us crazy and at the end makes us simply feel like a fool. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes. Mike.
Because We see these objects, automatically just like Krishna tells the Bhavitam Dhyana Vedena, all that intelligence is covered. So we are not able to see it as a relation with Krishna. So much impulse is there.
Practice, therefore. Right? Arjuna says, Chanchalahimana Krishna. And Krishna says, yes, it is undoubtedly difficult to control the messless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Detachment means detachment toward the practice also. Sometimes it's more successful than others. What is that practice? Oh. There's some attachment. There's some illusion arising in my consciousness due to my previous samskaras. I neither run toward nor hate it. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, knowing that the modes alone are active. I remember when I said that to one non-devotee, he said, illumination too? I'm like, yeah. The modes are vying for supremacy. As long as we're in this body, very nice in that purport. As long as we're in this body, it says sometimes there's going to be sattva-gun, sometimes there's going to be rajagun, sometimes there's going to be tamagun. Like, and it's just like, oh, there's rajagun. Hi, rajagun. You want to hang out? Fine, but I don't have anything to do with you. It's like you walk down the street and there's some monkey or there's some dog, you know. You don't kill it, right? But I hope you don't pet it. It just is a dog. Some street dog, some monkey. Oh, there's a monkey. Not my monkey. It's Krishna's monkey. I'm not like, oh, what a cute monkey. And I'm like, oh, what a terrible monkey. Yeah. So some desires arise in the mind, some attachment or some fear. Trividam narakasedam. Dwaramadmana, nashanamadmana, kamakrodas tatalobas, tasmade twatayam twajant. Attachment, fear, anger, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness. These things, they're going to rise in the mind and in the body as long as we have a body and mind. Don't think that's going to go away as long as we're in this body and mind. Very nicely explained in that purport to 14:22 to 25. Yes, they will arise. But you just walk past them. Oh. I don't have anything to do with this. Not mine to enjoy, not mine to renounce. It's just Krishna's. And you can see Krishna in it. Well, here's an opportunity for me to become more patient, an opportunity for me to become more tolerant, an opportunity for me to become more surrendered. Let me just surrender the desire to enjoy this. Let me just surrender the desire to control it. Let me surrender my resistance to it. Let me surrender my enjoyment mood, everything, all my attachment, all my aversion. I have nothing to do with it. It's not me. And then very quickly it passes. Like rivers going into the ocean. But when we start thinking, oh, and that's thinking about it, if we're doing this to go away, go away, go away. I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think, no. Then you're doing the same thing, you know. Just like, oh, okay. Let go. Let it go. It's not mine. Now, the Jnana Yogis, the Astanga Yogis, and the Karma Yogis, they're all doing that too. But what else do we do? In addition to letting go of the desire to enjoy or to renounce the attachment and the aversion, we're also saying it's Krishna. If some ordinary Kali Yuga woman is so beautiful, just imagine how beautiful is Krishna. Wow. We can fill our mind with Krishna. Wow, this is Krishna's energy. This whole universe is one spark of Krishna's energy. If this woman, this dog, this telephone, whatever we're attracted to, if this has so much attractive power, how much attractive power does Krishna have? And then when Krishna sees that we're doing these things, he gives us mercy. He makes it easy. That's what he says. 264, that's what he says. Haven't we experienced this? Have we experienced this? Everybody experienced this? That when I let go of attachment and aversion and I do the right thing and I think of Krishna, then all of a sudden Krishna just makes it easy. Yes? 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 Yes. And then it's just gone. And you're like, oh, that's nice. And things will come up again and again. You're like, oh, do I have to keep doing this again and again and again? Well, yeah. But it gets easier and easier and easier and more automatic and more fast until one's doing it practically automatically and quickly most of the time without even realizing it. Yes? It becomes practically automatic. And there'll still be some things that are particularly alluring that then we have to say, okay, okay. Let go of attachment and aversion. Think about Krishna. Surrender to Krishna. See Krishna. And gradually those things become less and less and less and less. Is that all right? What do they say? It works if you work. If we do it, it works. And sometimes we'll fail. Therefore, Krishna says suitable practice and detachment. And what happens if we fail? Then we just stand up again. Yeah? Right? Prabhupada says like a child, bhakti yoga is like a child learning how to walk. When first we learned how to walk, we were mostly falling down. And we keep trying. So sometimes we fail. Sometimes we get angry. Sometimes we become overwhelmed by the modes of nature, whatever. And then we're like, then we feel like Lord Shiva and we go, oops. What a fool I am. I got overwhelmed by the modes of nature. Oh my goodness. Okay. Good for my humility. Right? Good opportunity for me to practice humility. Pick up and go on again. And Krishna will be happy. He doesn't expect this to be, 100% successful in the first 10 seconds of Krishna consciousness. It's okay. We could take one more. Anybody else? Yes. Hare Krishna. Sort of. I can repeat what you say if the mic's not working.
Thank you so much for this question. My question to you is, do you let go of the attachment of the joy of feeling the love of Krishna as well?
No. Okay.
So it happens. It could be a bit personal, but it happens you feel the joy and you crave for that feeling more, the love of Krishna. But you don't feel it every time. Right? It happens. So it's you're asking, where's that feeling gone? It suddenly disappears. Neither do you crave for the material desires, but you crave for that feeling, but you don't feel it every moment. So
you let go of that attachment of feeling that love as well, because the more you think about feeling the love for Krishna, you are like kind of bewildered. Where's that feeling gone now? Why I can't feel that love?
Oh. Okay, let's see if I can answer this very quickly, because this is such a deep question, actually. It really is very deep. As we progress in Krishna consciousness, we come to a point where we become fixed, called nishta, where we do become most of the time neutral to the modes of nature. After that is something called ruchi, or a taste, where we're enjoying the service. And after that is a shakti, where our attachment is not so much to the service but to Krishna himself. And after that starts having the real emotions of love. So I may not be understanding you properly, but I think what you're talking about is an attachment to our happiness when we feel some connection with Krishna. That's what it sounded like. I may be wrong there, but that's what it sounded like. Okay. Yes, yes. So it's still... In the beginning, that's a good thing to be attached to, because we're still very much absorbed in getting our own happiness. And it's much better to be absorbed to try to get our own happiness in Krishna consciousness than to get our happiness from some nonsense. Definitely. But Krishna wants us to have a different kind of happiness. So if we're switching from, I want to enjoy Krishna's energy separately from him to try to be happy in illusion, to I want to enjoy Krishna directly in love to be happy, that's a good switch. But eventually we want to come to something Rupa Goswami talks about, where our happiness is so mixed with Krishna's happiness that we lose all concept of our own happiness. And we're only working to make Krishna happy. We experience this sometimes in this world, where you love someone so much that all you're thinking about is making them happy, and you forget about your own happiness, but you feel happy in making them happy. You follow? Like your friend's having a birthday, and you're getting a party ready for them, and all you're thinking about is, what do they like to eat? Will they be surprised? All day you're just thinking about your friend. And you don't think about yourself for 1 minute all day, but you're so happy in thinking about your friend's happiness. And when your friend comes in and you go, surprise! And your friend is like, wow! And you're happy at their happiness. You don't have a separate thing. That at no time during the day were you thinking, oh, I can't wait to become happy from this. I can't wait to become happy from this. So that's a little idea. And we're supposed to come to that point with Krishna. Now, don't ever give up your attachment to coming to that point with Krishna. But the attachment to, I want to have that ecstatic feeling because I want some ecstasy and I'm tired of material happiness, that's okay as an interim beginning stage, but ultimately, yes, we should go beyond that as well. Is that all right for a very brief answer? Was that clear? But don't ever give up the attachment to wanting for Krishna to be happy. Even if it's not there all the time, keep feeding that and keep fanning that and associate with people who are going to keep fanning that. And, if there's some pastime or there's some philosophical description that increases that, keep reading that. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.